With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Timo Abbasdaily, and joining me to review all the action from Abu Dhabi this weekend is Jesse Billington. How are you?
I'm not doing too bad. Busy little Monday. We've just finished recording our sort of F1 review from Abu Dhabi, so we're sort of in the right headspace to dive into some F2 action, and some good F2 action it was.
Yeah, much better than the Formula 1 news, but before we get into all of that, we do have some actual news from the feeder series world for what the hell has happened, and we're going to kick off with F1 Academy news, because Tina Housman has signed with Prema and Aston Martin for the 2024 F1 Academy season, which, not unexpected, but also slightly left field, and an interesting signing nonetheless, and the Swiss licensed driver's single-seaters this season from karting, and she pretty much impressed straight away. So in the debut weekend, she got a podium in the Formula Winter Series, and she also claimed victory in the female category of the Italian F4 Championship this year. So not too surprising why Aston Martin looked at her and thought, yes, we're going to sign you up for that. But at the same time, it's interesting that we've got another new name for the grid for next year and not someone that we've seen with the grid for this year. At the same time, though, Jess Hawkins has got a promotion of sorts, I guess, or maybe it's just another bit to add to her ever-lengthening title at Aston Martin, and she's now Aston Martin's head of racing for F1 Academy. Not entirely sure what that means and what that brings along, aside from what doing possibly exactly what it says on the tin, but good for her that she's been kept in the spotlight and being able to share her knowledge and talent with, well, at the very least, Tina Housman.
Yeah, I think Tina Housman, I think, is a sensible sort of pick, really. She's got a relatively decent track record, and the whole point of F1 Academy is we're looking to bring in some new talent. I think there'll be some names that hang over from year to year, but with Tina, I think it's an interesting choice. And again, Formula Winter Series and Italian F4 are both very competitive championships to race in, so if she's able to pull out some victories there and look at home and competent in those, she'll hopefully transition well to the very F4 spec F1 Academy. When it comes to Jess Hawkins, though, this one's a really good move, actually. It's great to see her being elevated to essentially all F1 teams have a head of racing. They have someone who sort of coordinates a team's racing plan and calendar and structure through the year, how they're going to approach weekends. And it's a relatively high-ranking role because of the amount of things it encompasses, and you are the person that is in charge of how drivers approach weekends. Obviously, this is the first time Aston Martin are going to have like a feeder series or a series of junior drivers. So they need someone to coordinate that. And I think Jess Hawkins is the sensible choice for that. And again, one of the things that we've wanted with W Series and with F1 Academy is to see women being promoted into these higher roles, not just driving. And it's worked its charm there with Jess Hawkins. Obviously, we've heard rumour that she was quicker than Drugovich in the test sessions over the summer with the like two-year-old chassis. But clearly Aston Martin have sort of appreciated that she's got some racing nous and she knows what she's doing behind a wheel, but also she's possibly very well equipped to translate that into sort of speech and text and into tuition and be able to tell someone what to do, not necessarily just be able to do it yourself. I think that's the sign of a good teacher, is not necessarily to be good at something, but also be able to coordinate and instruct someone else on how to be that good. So a sensible choice there and a glowing indictment of Jess Hawkins' abilities and talents.
And amongst all the Red Bull breaky-uppy news that we've had over the last few weeks and months, Mercedes have decided they want in on the action, though.
Yeah, it's Interesting that Paul Aron has parted ways from Mercedes. He was formerly a junior driver for them. The Estonian joined the F1 team's junior squad in July 2019.
It's weird that I can remember when that happened in the announcement.
I vaguely can as well, actually, because it was sort of an odd left field choice out of nowhere, really. But yeah, it's now a shame that they've sort of split up. The 19-year-old has now competed in Formula 3 this year, where he finished third in the standings with one win and has obviously participated in the F2 season finale. Hasn't been confirmed a race seat yet, but I think the idea is that he'll carry on whoever he raced for this weekend and just sort of
simply stick with them. Because he was replacing Novalek, wasn't
Novalek, correct, yeah. So it looks like he's going to have an F2 seat next season, but whether or not he has that Mercedes link moving forwards or whether he's now open to look elsewhere. And like you mentioned, Red Bull are dipping in and out of junior drivers a hell of a lot at the moment. They might sort of dip their toe in the water there and see how he progresses. But that's all still to play for. In other junior driver news and possible F1 Academy news, we mentioned recently that Dorian Pin is looking to move into F1 Academy or possibly Freca. But we sort of questioned at the time her lack of single-seater experience. Clearly someone was listening.
She took that personally.
Yeah, or they anticipated that as a question. And she's returning to open-wheel racing for the F4 Southeast Asia Series over the winter, debuting in Sepang. The series is already underway with an opening series of rounds at the Zhuzhou circuit, as well as the non-championship round in Macau, before heading to Sepang, where Pin will race for Prema. Of course, she's a Prema driver. She's raced for them in LMP2. So it makes sense that she'll be having their back and going over there. And again, I think if the team like what she's able to do over in this F4 style series, obviously Prema have a seat in F1 Academy, so they won't make that move. They obviously have seats in Freca as well.
They've got two seats in F1 Academy at the moment.
Yes, so what it very much does is opens up a lot of opportunities on bigger, more conventional circuits with the team. It gives Prema a sorry, low cost in inverted commas means of trialing Pin in some single seater stuff. And it's despite her successes in a variety of other GT and endurance races, you've got to remember she is still exceptionally young. Like she's standard sort of F2, F3 age. So it's
convinced that she's fully grown yet as in terms of height. I'm just like, surely you're getting taller.
She is a very small woman. But yeah, it's good stuff from her, and hopefully we'll be seeing her making some moves into some more well-known and recognisable series as time goes by. But equally, it does give us a series to follow through the winter and keep an eye on and keep our racing brains sharp. We obviously mentioned in our F1 sort of full weekend review podcast, the FP1 drivers, Drugovich, Schwartzman, Vesti, Doohan, Pourchaire, Hajar, Behrmann, and O'Sullivan, all taking place in FP1 and impressing, finishing in that order as well. We mentioned over on the main podcast those that impressed us. I don't think we really need to retread the same ground. You can go and listen to that. It is going to be chaptered in there, so it should be easy enough to find. I don't know if you've got any other additional bits you want to float in here, though.
No, it's just interesting to see them all there, like we said before in the other podcasts, and doing, again, just worth mentioning because of how well he did in the rest of the Formula 2 weekend, impressed the most, I think, as a complete package. Vesti and Pourchaire were the obvious two that everyone was keeping more of an eye on, but I think Doohan in both F1 and F2 kind of flew under the radar a bit and deserves to get a shout-out because he did pretty darn well, all things considered.
Yeah, Doohan, for me, definitely the one that really impressed. Although, of course, across the whole weekend, Pourchaire did impress, but for a multitude of other reasons. In other news,
we'll get to that though.
Yeah, we'll get to that in due course. First, though, we've got to mention a new face in Formula 2.
Yeah, not surprisingly, the Formula 3 champion Gabriel Bortoleto is joining Formula 2, and he's going to be driving for Virtuosi in 2024. I'm kind of surprised we had to wait this long for an announcement for F3 driver to get the step up to F2, but it's here now, so it doesn't matter. And we already know who his teammate's going to be, and it's going to be Kush Maini, which I'm not against. He's had an excellent season and has definitely proven himself worthy of staying in Formula 2 for another season. So it's going to be interesting because, obviously, Formula 3, he was nowhere. Now he's been everywhere and is pretty good, but he's going to be partnered with the reigning Formula 3 champion, so that could be a very interesting dynamic to watch next year, especially for a team that isn't bad, but hasn't been exceptional either. So it's going to be a fascinating one to see how that unfolds and just all of it's quite interesting to be watching next year from a clinical point of view.
Yeah, it's a interesting one. They're very much sort of one of the mid-pack teams, a bit like Dams have been on occasion. But it also means that Jack Doohan and Amaury Cordeel have been booted from their seats. They don't have seats next year. In fact, we've only got Zach O'Sullivan, we know, ART Grand Prix.
Andrea, I wouldn't be surprised if Doohan doesn't come back to Formula 2 and he goes to maybe Super Formula or somewhere else entirely for next year. Potentially does what Piastri did this last year and wait on the sidelines hoping that Ocon and Gasly explode at each other and then he can claim one of their seats. As for Cordeel, we were all just amazed he got a seat this year, weren't we, quite frankly? So
yeah, a little bit of a shock. But I mean, we'll quickly recap the drivers we know to have seats at the time of recording, at least. We've got O'Sullivan at ART, Kimi Antonelli at Prema. Carlin hasn't announced either of their seats. Crawford is someone we're about to speak about, actually, who is moving to Dams this year. Gabriele Bortoleto, Ankush Maini, we've just mentioned, at Invicta Virtuosi Racing. Halgrim Colapinto at MP Motorsports. Van Amersfoort is currently open. Hightech is currently open. Campos is currently open. Trident is currently open. The 0 point scoring PHM Racing have got Joshua Dirksen. And this is a name who's flown completely under the radar. I'm glad you brought this up,
because this annoys me so much.
Why?
Because he's essentially coming from obscurity and it's just essentially PHM going, yes, we like money, please. And we're not actually going to... It's impressive in all the wrong ways for a Formula 2 team in equal machinery in a championship that has reverse grids to promote teams that are going to be a little bit duffer to try and capitalise on at least granting a couple of points here or there, for them to get absolutely sod all year. And they don't appear to be making an exciting change. I mean, yes, maybe we get a Kush Miney situation next year and this new guy is going to blow the socks off and I can eat my words. And I kind of hope I do in a way, but I will be very surprised if it happens. Whereas I'm going to bang my Sophia Flörsch drum, specially made for such occasions once again, purely for the fact of she scored more points this year in Formula 3 than any of the, all of their drivers in F2 combined did. Because again, it was zero. Why would you not take a chance on maybe scoring points rather than what is probably the absolute certainty of, again, not scoring anything? It just seems mad. And they've got such a good opportunity there for sponsorship, for marketing, for being the first F2 team to do it for a full season in, at the very least, ages, because I can't remember if Tatiana had a full season in there when she was there, because I know she came back and had one or two rounds, but I don't know if when she was in there before, if she got a full season or not. Probably
couldn't
not.
Couldn't say off the top of my head. But, yeah.
But again, there's so much potential for that team, and they have literally nothing to lose because they have nothing. And you just think, and again, it was, I think 43 points was the next thing up on the championship. Yeah, 43 points.
43, so
it's not even a small gap. But You just do something different. It annoys me to high hell.
Yeah, I mean, the best result they had was Roy Nissany scoring 2 ninth places, but unfortunately they were both in sprint races, so there was...
it's so typically Roy Nissany, but hey,
I'm in the top... it's a sprint race. It feels like they're just hosing opportunity to actually have good drivers in there down the drain. And I can appreciate why you're annoyed about it. And it does grind my gears a little bit. The only
Get Jamie Chadwick in there. Have an all-female team and just go for it. You know, like, even if you've got nothing at the end of the next year after doing that, at least you get
tried.
So much mega respect for it. It'd be like, you know what? You had nothing to lose. You didn't gain anything, but you didn't lose nothing. If anything, you made some friends along the way.
Yeah, I mean, conversely, though, we mentioned teams that have no drivers. We have a driver that has no team as well. Rotomo Miata, the driver moving from Super Formula to Formula 2, or at least rumoured to be moving over. He's possibly also looking at European Le Mans Series as well, Elms. So we'll see whether Rotomo gets a seat somewhere in this mix. It'll be interesting to see where he appears. But it's looking to be an interesting season next year.
Yeah, especially because we're not going to be getting some of the drivers back. That's just a certainty at this point. So there's not necessarily going to be an immediate, obvious championship contender so far. I mean, you look at some people who are coming into their third season, you think Helga, you think, okay, maybe you're going to do it finally. you know, Kimi Antonelli, like, you kind of have to be at least winning multiple races, otherwise the entire justification for you being there and skipping Formula 3 goes out the window. But there's so many unknowns, and there's no kind of one person to look at and go, yeah, you're going to be champion this year.
Mm. It'll be an interesting one. Of course, we've got new cars as well for next year when it comes to Formula 2. So there's a lot still to be answered for. That very much wraps out our news section. So we'll dive into the F2 action that was on track. And we know that Jack Doohan claimed the final pole position of 2023, a pretty good demonstration.
Perfect start to the weekend for him.
Yeah, in qualifying, which is what we like to see. Paul Aaron and, of course, Franco Colapinto making their Formula 2 debuts for Trident and MP Motorsport, respectively. Aaron, we've already mentioned, replacing Clément Novalak. Who is it that Colapinto replaced? MP?
That's a good question. MP Motorsport, who is there? Clearly someone very memorable.
Yes, flicks back through notes. It was D.A. Handarovila, of course, who's now gone off to MSG.
Mazzano. Oh, I was right.
Very memorable. What do we think to our two new boys entering the weekend?
You love to see it in the same way that you love to see new drivers in FP1 for Formula 1. I wasn't necessarily expecting much from them, but again, it's just good to kind of bed themselves in and get an idea and a feel for things if they do stay there for next year, which I think Colapinto is, so as we were talking about just now. So that should be fine on that one. So it was, kind of a bit of a very early prologue in a way, which is the opposite of what Abu Dhabi is normally described as for many reasons, but good for them at least. And I think it's also worth shouting out Kush Maini there for his qualifying in P3. Mika definitely helping him out there, and that working quite nicely as his driver coaching pair there. Especially when you look at the qualifying of Porcher down in P14 for both races. Yes, okay, spoiler alert, he did manage to make it work in the end, but he did make it difficult for himself. And if you had told us at the start of the year that come Abu Dhabi, Kush Maini is going to out-qualify Teo Porcher by a sizable amount, you'd have been very suspicious of what the other person had been drinking or smoking.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been the thing you anticipate, but it's one of those things that you like to see. You like to see drivers improve across a season and getting better. That's what feeder series is for.
That's how you can describe Formula 2 in a sentence.
Yeah, is you want to see those surprise poles. You want to see those surprise qualifyings, those surprise podiums. You want to see people improving. That's the point of a feeder series. It's where you get better. And when you see drivers getting better...
Again, it's just against someone like Porcher, you're like, oh, interesting.
Yeah, against Porcher.
You can improve, but don't take the piss with it.
Even less expected. So we'll dive into the sprint race, of course. Vesti P1 with fastest lap, Fittipaldi P2 and Vachon P3. This was very much the opening volley that Vesti needed to sort of start clawing back at it. Yeah, it was a fantastic little drive, really. It was...
He drove like a contender and just proved why he was up there. And regardless of Sunday's outcome at that point, because you obviously didn't know, you think, You've done the maximum there, and if you're Porcher, you're thinking, "Oh shit,
I've got a big fight on my hands.
I might not actually have this completely in the bag. Oh dear, yeah. I might need to. Oh no." But it's also worth noting that the first three quarters of the first lap, because of the safety car, because of Correa, it was just so much better than about 90% of the racing we've had all year in Formula 1, and it was ridiculous. They were nearly four wide going
wide
down
into turn six. It was bonkers.
Just thinking, this is why. See, Abu Dhabi does work. You just got the wrong car, so you need to make the car slimmer.
Mm. Smaller, lightweight, a bit more agile cars. It just...
But yeah, as well, you're saying about Fittipaldi. Yeah. You're saying about Fittipaldi and Vachon there as well. Brilliant and underrated drive from them a bit, really, because there was so much other stuff going on. And Vachon, I feel like he's the more underrated of the two, because he just seems to be flying under the radar quite a bit in most things he does, which... is unfortunate for him, because he's always like, guys, come on, I'm doing great stuff over here. And we're like, you are. Yeah, fair play.
He's one of those drivers that just sort of appears on the podium, or he got a win at in Austria in the feature race, if I remember correctly. And you just sort of go, oh, yeah, you're here.
You're also there.
I forgot you're quite quick. And you sort of look at sort of where he's placed this year, ninth overall, but he's been in a pretty good little sort of close lock with Maloney and Hauger. So he's not bad.
Not at all. I mean, Hauger himself, he got a P4 after a brilliant last lap overtake on Hadjar in a part of the track where you just don't normally get too much overtaking. Doing P6, bearing in mind he didn't start on pole because it was the sprint race, so we had the reverse of that. Wattrier P7, Iwasa P8. So it was a nice little top eight there, and they were all fairly bunched together towards the end. Correa was the spinner there, unfortunately, out on lap one, and not how he wanted to finish his last weekend. I mean, say finish, there was a feature race, but he didn't really make much of an impression there either, which is quite unfortunate. And of course, all of this meant that the championship would go down to Sunday's race. I do have a couple of little notes on the sprint, though. It's kind of disappointing to us for not doing more. It's kind of P8 was surprising from him, just because we're so used to him being quite a speedy little guy most of the time. And it was like, are you all right there?
I think he might have had the wind knocked out of his sock a bit, because he needed to get that pole position point and to stay in with a shot of getting the championship. And I think that he might have just sort of been kicked a little bit emotionally for not getting that, and possibly sort of not putting it all on the line earlier in qualifying. So I think I don't want to chastise him too much for underperforming.
Chastise him for there is the fact that it was an outside shot at the very best. And also, so you're not going to be in championship contention, but don't focus on that for the rest of the weekend. Just go out there and drive and enjoy it and just focus on doing the best you can. And it didn't feel like that came across.
There was something lacking in it, but we'll shuffle into the feature race.
Just say there are two more bits, actually. I did want to note that the Leclerc curse does continue, because he couldn't get off the grid and then broke safety car protocol to rejoin, and subsequently got a 10-second penalty, which he was already down the bottom of the grid anyway, so it didn't make too much of a difference, but it was just Leclerc's. Let's strike again.
He is reportedly looking at an endurance seat, though. I can't remember if it's hypercar or GT3, Arthur Leclerc. So he might be...
I'd be surprised if it was hypercar.
I think it's a big step.
Just because I feel like you should work your way up to that.
Yeah, but maybe the GT3 spec, we'll see what happens there.
That this did show the benefit of the sprint races done right for F1 and why reverse grids work? And we've seen yet another potential idea for what F1 are going to do with the sprints for next year, and just looking and going, why do you keep messing this up so much? You just look at your feeder series. It's done right there. Just do that, not these stupid other ideas. Look how well it works.
Yeah, they're due discussions on it in January, I believe, Formula One, that is, about how they set up their sprints, where they're going to be, how many, and crucially,
apparently they're going to give points out for the sprint shootout so that they can make sure that drivers don't drive slowly, so they can have position for some kind of a reverse grid for the actual sprint race, but then they move all of the scheduling around again. It's like, again, just qualify on a Friday, reverse your top 10 or top 20 if you want to make it really fun, and then go. Simple as that.
There's a way of doing it and sort of putting it together that works. I think that certainly the F2 setup does work, and it does provide interesting races, especially when you've got that reverse top 10, because the top 10, there is a little bit of disparity between the 10th and the first, but you end up with that race as the grid reorganizes itself, certainly through the short space of sprint races. But is that all you've got for the sprint race? And we can now dive
into that. That is very much so.
Excellent. So we can now dive.
The sprint race was slightly better than the feature race, I think, because whilst there was a championship up for grabs in the feature race, it seemed a bit calmer.
The feature race was very much sort of one of those slow burn style races that's quite rare for Formula 2. It's one of those ones where you're waiting for the pit strategies to play out and then see who can get to where by the checkered flag, which is quite a rare thing to have for F2 in that regard. It's very much an F1 style race. But by the time the checkered flag was flown, it was Doohan P1, Martins P2, and Vesti P3. Iwasa P4, far better race for him. Porsche, though, P5, really good recovery. Leclerc P6, Hauger P7, Hajar P8, Meini 9th, and Crawford 10th. And it was very much a case of who goes, if you go for their prime and then option, or option then prime, I think, and seeing what boils down to be the best result there. And it was tricky to tell, actually.
He did as much as he could do there, to be honest.
Yeah, I think much like Ferrari and F1, they were preying on a long safety car towards the end there so they could get him off those, at that point, worn harder compounds and onto something a bit softer to race towards the end.
Well, even without that, he's even if he'd come first, it wouldn't have been enough. He needed Pourchaire to either finish out points or not to finish at all. And even then, if he was finishing in the points, he then, I think 10th was the most he could afford, or maybe 8th. So as soon as he went past that, he was done. So there was nothing he could do, unfortunately. And I think he did arguably lose this championship earlier on in the season with the combined crashes in Spa and Monza. But again, just shows that Pourchaire couldn't really rest on his laurels and did have to work for it a bit harder than maybe he thought he was going to have to, because of Vesti showing that, okay, yeah, these mistakes have happened and this bad luck has happened, but don't count me out just yet.
Yeah, I think Pourchaire won the season on more of a balance of just consistency. He's not had...
Well, especially when you think about it, he's won one race all year, and that was in Bahrain.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 wins for Vesti, and yeah, he's lost to a chap with one win. It's just been that consistency of lots of second places, third places, just
it's a weirdly curious advert for Formula 2 there. Like, come to Formula 2 where you can win a championship with one race versus your nearest driver with 6. Wait, what?
Yeah, I'm not entirely certain how that one boiled down, but it is the interesting magic of Formula 2 and the way that it lines up. But yeah, I think it was Teo Pourchaire certainly. I don't think Teo Pourchaire won this season. I think Fred Vesti lost it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'd definitely say Spa and Monza would be the two where he sort of lost it a bit more. Maybe Silverstone as well with that retirement. I think it's unfair to include Zandvoort where both his rear wheels fell off. That seems a little beyond his control. But
yeah, there's not a button on the steering wheel that does that for you.
No, there isn't the sort of...
And if there is, they need to take that off.
...pop button. But yeah, it was an all right feature race, I think. But at the end of the day, I think the only thing everyone talks about from that feature race is going to be the championship winner, Teo Pourchaire. And of course, we've got to mention the rather clumsy move by Maloney on the final lap against Fred Vesti. I don't think he was ever going to beat him in that fight. It was an interesting one, the two sort of coming round that reprofile turn 9 out of the banking. And it
didn't actually make contact. It was just very close to each other and just both kind of losing it themselves, and Vesti taking avoid action, flying off the curbs, and Maloney just spinning around a bit. And I get it's the last lap of the last race of the season and you want to make sure you leave it all out there, but at the same time, you weren't gonna win that under any circumstances. And I think he'll be quite glad that everyone's talking about Pourchaire, and maybe he's not going to be so happy with us for talking about it here, because it's like, no, I haven't forgotten about you, Zane. That was a bit silly. Don't do that again next year.
Yeah, we're still going to mention our boy from Barbados, even if it was for a bit of a balls to the wall move. And yeah, when you've got that tire offset, I think at that point, you, as great as it is to see people fighting for it occasionally, that's one to just let go. Yeah, time and a place for that one. Colapinto, Behrmann, and Vershaw, and Mason for that matter, actually DNF'd, variety of different reasons. Behrmann was an interesting retirement. He sort of limped into the pits and then it died on pit entry. And it was quite the sketchy thing, because they were trying to get it into neutral. It was locked into gear. They couldn't tow it out the way. They had to get a recovery crane to do it. There was pit entry closed for a while.
Hampered Vesti slightly, yeah, because they would have maybe preferred to bring him in a bit sooner, like of all the cars and all the drivers to cause this. It's like, why did it have to be his teammate?
Yeah, it's just not the way you'd have liked it to pan out, but I think that's the way the cookie crumbles, and off with F2, it seems unfairer than most because of those very small gaps between drivers throughout the championship. It is that it feels harder to lose a championship by 3 points than it does to lose by 40.
Yeah. But that is the way that particular cookie crumbled in that instance, and does move us nicely into drivers that stood out. And I do have two on my list. Do you have anyone different aside from the obvious?
For me, from Abu Dhabi, it's got to be Doohan. He looked in control throughout it. I know that he wasn't up against the pressure of a championship, or even really at that point fighting for position against anyone.
I think that was the benefit for him, though.
Yeah, he had nothing on his shoulders and actually came away from it for the better. It meant that he jumped Iwasa in the standings, a man who, up until the start of the weekend, had been in the running for the championship.
He didn't really realise that he could be jumped in the standings, because we all kind of assumed that we just been complacent ourselves and not done any maths on it.
Yeah.
But, well, if Wes has got P3, that's that sorted. It's kind of like looking at Lewis in F1 and going, well, he's definitely got P3. That's fine. And then suddenly Alonso is ahead of him.
Yeah.
Wait, what? How did, of course, it's Fernando that does this, and obviously he didn't, but, you know, it'd be that kind of a thing. So it was just, again, has a very nice, strong, solid outing in FP1 and Formula One, gets pole position, gets the point that comes with that, does all right in a sprint race, gets some more points, then just leads pretty much lights to flag in the feature race and manages to banish memories from yesteryears in Abu Dhabi where his tyre came off in the pit and caused all of that debacle. And then can just drive off into the sunset and be like, right, regardless of what I do next year, I've ended that pretty damn perfectly as I can, and I've snatched myself P3 in the driver standings on top of it against a guy that was potentially up for an AlphaTauri seat for next year.
Yeah, it was very much the ending that I think Doohan wanted to a season, and quite the surprise sort of capitulation to it all. And I'm happy with that. I'm happy with him for that. So who was your other driver that stood out? I know you've got Doohan on your list as well.
Just had to be Vesti, just because he tried. He really, really tried. And again, it shows that when a weekend can go right for him in terms of there's no bad luck and there's no penalties, no nothing, no nonsense going on, he is, that's why he's a contender, as we mentioned before. And he deserved to have a shout at the championship. And in the end, it was only 11 points that separated them. So that's not too bad. And looking at what that gap was at the start of the weekend and how long that gap had been there, because of the massive gap between the penultimate and final rounds of the season, for it to only be that much, you kind of got to respect it.
Yeah, I think for putting off a championship that's gone that long and sort of put up that much of a fight, I think it's got to, you've got to doff your cap to, I think the obvious praise there goes to Porsche, but for Vesti to be able to put up that longer fight against the odds when sometimes things weren't going his way was really a testament to that.
Does mean though that Porsche did indeed win the championship, and it's going to be interesting to see what he does next year, because probably not going to be Formula 1 as is tradition now for anyone who wins Formula 2. Vesti obviously in second, 192 points, and then Doohan sneaking into P3 with 168 points. I don't think we're going to see, well, we're definitely going to see the top two in F2 next year. I don't think we're going to see Doohan there next year, and if we do, I'll be very interested to see who he's with. And it's kind of exciting for them in terms of where they all go next, and interesting for Formula 2 for next year, because you've taken the obvious people who would be up for a title contention out of it, and there's no one, as we were saying before, obvious to be that, to be that replacement as such.
Yeah, it's early to call who's going to be in that title fight. I mean, I'd love to think that we're going to see an absolute sort of wild card of a driver come through and make a complete crazy show of things. Like we see O'Sullivan going up against Antonelli for a championship in F2.
And Kushmaini takes it from both of them.
I was about to say Kushmaini. I mean, his progress through the latter half of this season has been pretty good, and obviously he's now got the off season, he's moving to a relatively decent team. If he's able to make further progress, it'll be really interesting to see what happens there. Helga,
especially when you see the look on Jehan Drubala's face when he gets an F1 seat and he doesn't, oh come on,
yeah,
I was meant to be India's next golden boy.
Yeah,
too bad.
I mean, Helga, it'd be nice to see something from him, but deep in my heart, I don't
again,
think he's got it in
I
him.
I think the thing that's the trouble here, though, is the fact that even if he did, and I have this problem with Porsche and Vesti, and to an extent, Drugovic, and potentially as well, even with how these other drivers, I'll say in a second, have done in Formula 1 in their respective times with Mick, with Yuki, with Joe, none of them have, with the exception of Piastri, have really excited me since when they've been kind of teased to going into F1 or actually got into F1. I've not looked at any of them and thought, you had that a little bit with Mick just because it's Mick. But everyone else, you're kind of like, you probably do all right. But you never were expecting them to be the next massive thing. We've not really had anyone since Albon and Charles and Giorgio came in that you're like, okay, this could be quite interesting for Formula 1 now to see what happens. Whereas all these drivers, They're good, don't get me wrong, they're very good. But they don't have that piastriness about them where you're like, ooh, this is going to be fun now. And there's no one on the grid for next year just yet where I'm that excited for either. I'll be interested to see how it all pans out, but I don't see any of them going into F1 and really shaking things up in the way that Piastri did, in the way that Charles has done, in the way that George has done.
Yeah, I think we obviously had the Twitch quartet coming in who were, they were like the next hot prospect in F1, and then there was sort of a gulf for a long while, and then we got Piastri, who sort of came in off of that sort of run of dominance and eventually got his seat, and this year has certainly proved it. I haven't seen an F2, F3 driver at the moment, bar possibly Antonelli, that's really setting that stage alight.
But even then, Antonelli, we've only got some really low formula there, and it's impressive, but Formula 2 is a whole different thing, and he's really got to justify it straight from the get-go as to why he deserves to have skipped Formula 3 to be there.
Mm,
and if he doesn't, maybe everyone should be thinking, we can't force the next Max Verstappen into existence, and probably best we don't anyway, because we need to have some breathing room between eras of dominance, just for the sake of variety and good sport in the meantime. And also just, they all just get so much younger every year, and you just think you're maybe asking too much of them too quickly, and then wondering why no one's excited for them to get into F1, or why there's no seats available.
There's not that build-up.
And why you'd rather sign up someone like Hulk, who's a lot older, in the same way, like, yeah, bring back Fernando, bring back whoever, because it's just keep Bottas, because it's a safe pair of hands, you know what you're doing with it, whereas a driver that's new, it's just kind of like, yeah, you're good, but what can you actually do?
Where's the sparkle? Where's the show? We'll see how it pans out. Obviously, we've got 2024 to look forward to now, but the last thing we need to wrap up, of course, was the Constructors, where there was actually a bit of a battle going on all the way through the field for this one, really. There was like two, three except pairs 11. Battling, apart from 11th, which was very solidly in the hands of PHM Racing. But at the end of the day, it was ART got 353 points and the title. Prema in second place, 322. Grosjean Carlin, 220 in P3. Dams, 214 for P4. Virtuosi, 176 points in P5. MP Motorsport, 172 points, P6. VAR in 121, Van Am Sport Racing. High Tech, 112 in P8. Campos in P9 with 99, which is quite a nice little bit of symmetry there. And then Trident.
Kind of annoying that they didn't get 100, though.
Yeah, kind of annoying, but equally P9 on 99 points. That sort of works. Trident in 10th with 43 points. Obviously, severely bolstered by that win from Clément Novalak in Zandvoort, though.
Well, you know, it's got to contribute something, I suppose, hasn't it?
He pulled his weight this season. He pulled his weight against whoever else it was in that seat.
Well, he helped them solidify P10 in the championship after staving off fierce competition from PHM, and after Campos proved that, yeah, we're not going to catch him, are we?
Exactly. He can hold his head high as he goes and does some more podcasting. I think that is a perfect point for us to wrap up on our podcast. Any final points you'd like to make, Timo?
I'm glad we had Formula 2 this year, because we needed it in comparison to the Formula 1. It's on the same weekend. At least you were going to get some good racing.
Yeah, there was at least...
And when you've got Alex Jakes and Alex Brundle in the commentary box for the majority of the year, that's always a good shout as well.
Oh, my good old lunchtime date of Alex Brundle. Yeah, can't go wrong there. Yeah, there's been a good F2 season. It's not been one of the sparklers of all time, but
we never have a bad F2 season, and it's been good.
It's certainly been one of the better ones. And that's a nice point to wrap up on then. So, Timo, in the meantime, where can the people find you?
You can find me over on Is It Fast, on the Curbs, the Nitro RX Podcast, Paddock Sorority, and of course, ye old Instagram. Yourself?
I can be found on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube as @JesseOnCars. And if you want even more from me, you can find me writing for Classic Car Weekly. And if you want more from the podcast, of course, you can find our Abu Dhabi F1 review elsewhere on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever else you get your podcasts. And of course, we'll be back for a big season review from Formula 1 and Formula 2.